Hello and welcome to another episode of Monday Mile. My name's Amy Fuller and this is your source of all things Monday motivation. It's your walk and talk podcast and today's guest is a friend of mine. She was the first ever black female to play cricket for England. She's an entrepreneur. She's a top broadcaster, BBC Sky. She's got it all going on. I don't know how she's even found the time to meet us. Ebony, welcome to Monday Mile.
Thanks for the big build-up, mate. I appreciate that. Normally you just call me Ebs, but for today I'll enjoy it and soak it up.
Let's actually get your full name in there. Ebony Jewel Rainford Brent. That's quite a mouthful.
It's long.
That's not even your full name. Isn't there more to it?
Yeah, it's Ebony Jewel Coralie Camellia Rosamond Rainford Brent. That's like actually on the passport.
And that was literally just pure shutdown. And I thought I'd got your full name. But
it's
at least four names.
I don't even say it in the right order, it's that much. So don't worry about it.
How are you doing?
I'm good, man. It's good to be here.
We are in your ends.
Yeah, in South London, maybe the cool bit of South London in the sense of, well, actually all of South London is cool, but I do love the river. Like, it's me. It kind of just calms me out a little bit, so it's nice to be.
And I feel like the sun is shining on us today, just for you. How are you doing today?
I'm good, actually. It's been manic of late. Like, just life is just keep myself so busy. That, it's actually nice to, like, I like this sort of thing where you stop and you chill and you slow down.
Really in a little bit.
Yeah.
But we're getting the step game up. What do you think about the whole walk and talk podcast kind of thing?
I like it because it's a little bit more active, it's a little bit more engaging. Obviously, I know you can talk a lot, so it's right up your street. It suits your personality. And, I think it's just something different, isn't it? Like, you know, I think You can consume content now in so many different ways, and I like that you can have a podcast visual, moving, as well as you can listen to it in other formats. So yeah, I'm loving it.
100%, and we get the steps in, which I'm all about these days. So good. So fill me in. What's the routine like at the minute? You're a full-time broadcaster, pioneering the way for someone like myself looking up to you in sports broadcast. It's wicked to see a successful ex-athlete absolutely crushing it. And it's not just the broadcast, there's lots of moving parts. So yeah, what's going on in the life of Ebs right now?
So I say, yeah, main job is broadcasting. I work mainly for BBC Sky on the international men and women's cricket, some domestic stuff, and it is cool. It's like, I love the media game, I'm sure you do too, just because I do like buzz, I do like energy, and you're constantly around like people being creative, sport, people who enjoy that whole buzz vibe. So what's good about that is cool. Like, I'm filming over the next couple of weeks a documentary on sport and climate change, or cricket and climate change, which is great. So this is kind of the window off, and we're still quite busy with that. And
it's your off window, and I'm like, Ebs, can you come on my podcast, please?
Yeah, it's going to be full on. And then we're going to roll into the summer. So this summer we got it's when I work sort of May to end of September, it is like on. You're traveling every day, just on the go. It's mental. So there's that. In the process of building a charity at the moment called the ACE Programme. You might see some branding.
Yes, look at the branding.
I like Stash, actually. Our head of the programme, Chevy's all about Stash, so he's kitting me up.
Nice. And tell us a little bit about the ACE Programme, because it's pretty cool what you've got going on.
Yeah, so, I mean, you mentioned in the intro that, I was the first black woman to play, which is something I'm proud of, but it really frustrates me that we haven't seen more come through. You know, it's a bit like anything in the sport. It kind of frustrates you if you don't see it reaching out to more. So we've just got a charity where we're talent IDing and then getting kids to academies and then trying to get them into the performance system.
Nice. So how does that work then with talent ID? Because I've always wondered. I remember even being at school and had that dream of, you know, potentially being a professional sports person, but I never saw it. So how does it work?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So we've got different layers. We've got coaches now going into schools. We're in London and Birmingham at the moment, and they're going to be hitting a couple of other cities soon. So they're going in and they're getting not only kids who are already playing, so we've got on our academy kids who are quite good already and you know, capable of playing performance cricket, but we're also getting raw talent. So
nice.
We're looking for the skill set. You know, I'm sure if you broke down your sport, there would have been a core things you would look
for. A somatotype.
Yeah, that you're thinking, right. So we're profiling, looking for boys, girls, and then getting them into development centres, and then when they're good enough, into the academies and then into the sports.
Cool. So. And I saw you guys have raised a ridiculous amount of money already. Is it like £500,000?
Yeah, £500,000 already. That's cool. And we need to get on that soon.
Should we get Rollerblades for the next episode?
Next one, I mean, good luck with that. Yeah, we raised £500,000. We're possibly about to secure quite a significant amount more. So I suppose on my off moments, it's a lot of strategic conversations to try and make this go national and potentially other sports that are underrepresented.
That's awesome.
Busy.
It's not easy to get into cricket, is it?
No, my own journey is a kind of an example of that. Like, look, I grew up in South London, not too far from here, and even though we're right next to one of the biggest stadiums in the world,
yeah,
it still wasn't. It wasn't seen in my school. My friends didn't see it, and it was only through kind of something similar-ish to what we're doing with Ace. A guy came into our school and like actually offered it. And I tell you what, I love hitting things, right? I love hitting golf balls, drum kits, cricket balls. And so once I hit it, I was like, this is wicked. So I think until you're exposed to opportunities, you don't know if something can be for you. So I think it's important that, you know, with a lot of things, you break down the barriers. I know for you guys, you know, I've never tried what you do, but I wouldn't have minded if someone could have introduced me at a young age. I think I would again.
I think that's the hardest part, is being introduced into it. Like, I never ever thought that I could become a pro snowboarder, and then it's just seeing someone at the local dry slope in Bromley go from the top of the slope to the bottom, do a cheeky air, and I'm like, oh yeah,
that's
that looks
pretty
good.
Cool.
But it's almost like the visual element and being able to relate to it, right? Which is, I guess, is what a big part of Ace is about.
And I think we're doing, you know, you'd relate to this as well. We're doing a lot of visual content and videos with the young kids, with the coaches, and that's really engaging people because they're seeing people who look like them doing stuff which they maybe haven't seen that before. So I think visibility is something that we're really keen on pressing, and also females seeing themselves, because I think that's sometimes the hardest. It's like young boys sometimes might have seen it and believe it's for them, but girls, it takes a little bit more for them to realise this is an offer. So yeah.
And talking about women in sport, you're the director of the Surrey Women's Cricket Club. That's pretty cool. How did that come about?
Yeah, so I've been on the board now at the club for 5-6 years. God, I feel like I'm getting old now. You know, I think the grey hairs are kicking in. Yeah, I used to be young.
I don't see any grey hair.
Mate, get it under the hat.
Keep the hat on.
So how it came about, look, I've been working in, I retired from sport, did a bit of broadcasting, working for a charity, and I started to get into sports administration anyway, and then I put some ideas to our chairman, the chairman at the club, Richard Thompson, about how we can make the women's game more integrated within the club, commercial opportunities, things like that. And yeah, we went through it and they offered me a role. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
So been on that for 5-6 years.
Yeah, and it's grown. And like, luckily my involvement now is this massive team where before I used to be sort of gritty in doing all the hard graft needed. And now it's evolved to the point there's professional contracts, there's head coaches, academy coaches, regional teams. So it's all happening.
Nice. When's the punter open day? When are you going to let me have a little go with the bat?
You want to roll, yeah?
I think I'd actually be scared, you know. Ooh. That ball comes at you with some serious pace.
Yeah, but you're a little adventure queen.
So what are the sort of physical attributes needed to play cricket?
Yeah, look, it's in some ways a simple game, some ways a complicated game. I think if I'm looking for a person to get involved, if it's a batter, I want hand-eye coordination. So just, you know, simple, can you hit it? Can you whack it? How hard can you whack it? And there's a million technical things that can go into that. But if you strip it back, it's can you hit it? Can you time it? Have you got power? And then when it comes to bowling, what's cool about cricket, actually, I think, to other sports, there's not one type of person. So a spin bowler might have completely different physical attributes, but can somehow manipulate through the wrist to get the ball to do things off the surface. And then a quick bowler, obviously, you want to be aggressive and try and take people's heads off bowling the ball as fast as you can. So, you know, power, pace, those sort of things start to come into play. So You know, I think the cool thing about cricket, like, one, it's a mental game.
Yeah.
Very strategic, very tactical.
It's a long game as well, no?
Yeah, there's a few different formats. There's one that goes on for 5 days. Mate, I won't take you to that one first. But there is a short format which lasts like 3 hours. So the 3 hour game, I think you'll be down for.
I'll be all right with
you'll
that.
You'll be all right with that. Just whack fun. It's
will
all
I have the mental capacity to stay focused for 3 hours?
I'll take you down the rabbit hole. Though. Once you get hooked, that's the thing with the game. Once you get in, then you start going into the longer formats.
So playing for England. Mm-hmm. And you're also a part of the team. Was it in 2009?
You've done your research.
Won the first World Cup. I enjoyed researching, Ev.
Cheers, mate. Yeah, we were 2009. We were part of a team that won two World Cups. So there was a 50 over and a 20 over, which are two formats. And the Ashes all in 1 year, which is, it's pretty massive. We were led by our captain at the time, Charlotte Edwards. And I suppose what was cool about that is we were moving from, I suppose, amateur to the start of professionalism. And yeah. I think that success helped propel us because, you know, we started to get some more media coverage. I think it mostly helped actually with the timing of me starting to move into the media career. Actually, I think it helped with profile because people started to recognise the team and stuff. So it was an amazing win from an athlete's perspective. Like, let's face it, we just focus single-mindedly on one goal for your whole life.
Yeah.
So to actually be part of that. And then I think the other thing is just seeing how that moment helped move women's sport on, and the success in this country meant that more investment went into girls' sport. So, it was really cool. Me as a player, I was, I was a good player, but God, we were in a team where, I was in and out of the squad. Like, it was one of those where I was never a dead set player. I'd love to have been like consistent, the one winning every game. It wasn't. You play some games when the others weren't fit and then you get in, and it was one of those sort of careers. So I think I learned a lot about resilience and chasing your dreams and digging deep, really. So it was a good career.
That's cool. And what elements of the professional game have you actually taken into your broadcast career as far as resilience goes? You've had your fair share of adversity in terms of injury.
Yeah.
So in terms of setbacks, what have you taken from your sporting career into what you're doing now?
Yeah, I think sport is, I think it's one of the biggest things that has developed me as a person in so many ways. Like, one is a confidence, right? So I would say people think I might be a confident person, but I'm not. Like, I
don't believe that.
No,
for
I'm
one
a loud
minute.
Person.
Because every time I see you, you are so vibrant. When I think of you, I just think big smile and vibes. Literally the word is vibes. You're like,
vibes.
Yes, mate, Ebs, vibes. That's what I think about you. Well, that's the energy you give off.
That's good energy, but I wouldn't say there's confidence though. I would just say I'm like bubbly. I think we both are. We're both lots of energy. But what I would say is, like, playing sports, every time I went out to bat, I never thought I'm going to do well. I never thought, oh my God, I got this. But I think you get into a routine of, even if you're not feeling confident, you still go, you still just do it, and you mentally learn how to overcome the fear. So I think that's what gave me a baseline for everything. I think media, I've spent years, like, every time I went into the commentary box for the first few years, thinking someone's going to drag me off air, or, you know, I was going to get slayed when you get Twitter trolls coming at you. But I think that conditioning through sport of, even if you're nervous or you're fearful or you're doubtful, still just going for it, like, I think that's what I've taken the most. And so that kind of leads towards resilience as well, is, you know, being able to keep coming back to injuries, you still keep coming back. But I think you can get conditioned through it. So that's what I think sport does. It's like, you know, every day you trained. It's not like you can not train tomorrow because you don't fancy it.
You kind of don't really have a choice, and it's what sort of makes you, right?
You have to do it. It's part of it.
What's so interesting, a conversation we've had previously before, is how sport is such a leveller. And I think you spoke in a similar way to me, like, it creates this platform of confidence.
Yeah.
So when you go into a room full of CEOs and executives of this and that, and you can't just like, this is me, this is my vibe. And I don't know about you, but for sure, sport has given me that platform to feel confident in any environment, which is a very, very bold statement, but I think it's taught me to be me.
Yeah.
I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. I think there is a lot of that. I think I think you're right. And let's be honest as well, as athletes, yeah. people do get quite like excited about athletes. Like if you say, yeah. I represent England or GB or whatever, people do go, oh, that's really cool. So it does give you a little bit of, you know, you walk into a room and people do, yeah, they do, which is nice. You also then have to back it up, but it is nice. and I think the authenticity bit, yeah, it's something I've kind of developed over time. So like being yourself more, being your own energy. I think I've always been lively, but I definitely think I'm getting more into being myself. So, you know, it's a process,
it's
right?
It's a process. It's definitely a long process. Talking about routine, tell me a little bit about how you sort of manage your time now. Obviously, you've got broadcasts that, you know, they run through the night. They're done in different countries, different time zones, as well as managing your other businesses. We'll delve into that. You're quite the entrepreneur, but... What's the routine like? How do you manage juggling all of those plates?
Yeah, it's a manic one. I think a few things. One, I hate mornings and I hate anything before 10 o'clock. So I hate the fact that the world like needs you to be ready, because I'm just not mentally ready. I'm just like, why can we not just move everything till 12 o'clock afternoon and then go? So because of that, I think I need a few things. One, like I actually give myself an hour in the morning just to like mellow out, and this is where I'll drink like 10 cups of tea.
Love that. 10 cups of tea.
I just back them. I just
what kind of tea are you drinking?
So breakfast tea, then move into a matcha,
but what brand of tea?
Inspira tea. I'm not sure you've heard of it. It's like a new really cool brand that I've just launched, so get onto it. Honestly, I'm obsessed with tea, hence why I've launched a tea brand. We'll talk about that in a bit. But I think what it is actually why I launched it is because I know for the manicness that we had, I need like that moment of stillness, a moment of chill, and I find like I'm in a proper routine for an hour, just digesting, like waking up, the fact that I have to wake up. Two is going through writing my diary and just what's going on, and then three is like getting laser focused on what are my priorities, because usually there's like 20 million things going on, and if you chase all of them, you get none of them done.
No,
so I have to kind of write, like really unpick the puzzle of what do I need to attack, when do I need to be prepping for something in 3 weeks that now, even though I might forget? And so, you know, I kind of go through and just really prioritise what I've got to do. I use the 80-20 rule, which I don't know if you've heard about it, but if you haven't, look it up, because honestly, it's one of the best things I've ever used.
Is that something like 80% work, 20% fun? Or is it...
I like the sound of that, but not quite. It's basically a mathematical equation that was discovered by someone called Pareto, like in the 1930s, which says, like... 20% of things account for 80% of the results. So let's say your wardrobe, you're going to wear most probably 20% of the stuff 80% of the time. In a business organization, 20% of the people actually make 80% of the money. So the point of it is to go, where are my key most impactful 20% things? Because there's a lot of 80% stuff that actually makes no difference to like our results. So it's kind of separating what feels important but actually might not be a big impact.
It's almost like there's loads of noise, and it's silencing the noise and focusing on the key elements of whatever it is you want to achieve.
Love that.
I feel like I've always got loads of noise going on and I think that's why I've wanted to do this, because I'm like, right, I'm gonna laser focus my energy on this, and this is what I do.
Exactly. This is an 80-20 activity.
I get to walk and talk. It's half social. And get to see some mates, chat, and get my steps
in. A bit of everything, all in, tick, tick.
Tell us a little bit about Inspira Tea.
Yeah, so I've just launched. I know you've got your Fuller Beans going on. I just followed you on Insta, by the way. So Insta,
oh,
Inspira,
nice,
following
Fuller. Nice.
But basically, yeah, I've always wanted to go down the entrepreneurial route. So, like, I've worked in sport, broadcasting, I've done all sorts. But I think the one thing I really want to crack is the entrepreneurial world. And I wanted to do something I was passionate about. I was inspired to move, actually, because I've been doing this documentary on climate change and realised, like, my favourite number one big tea brand was rammed with plastic in the bags.
Oh, no.
And it just made me feel a little bit like this is going through my body and it's going into the environment. I'm just going to go to loose leaf, better quality tea and drink it.
Nice.
And then I started to speak to lots of friends and realised they were feeling the same. So it's kind of like, do you know what? Why don't I create a brand which is ethical and sustainable, but also make it more fun? So there's all these tea cocktails and tea recipes and stuff like that.
You've got a really nice mixture of different flavours, haven't
you? Yeah, different blends.
I actually had a little English breakfast tea late last night. And I have to say, aside from listening to what you've just said, it tastes really pure and like clean and soft.
Yeah, that's a good. We're going to clip that and put that. Yeah,
is that good feedback?
That is very good feedback.
I really did notice the difference between like just a normal tea bag. And that it was like...
It's because they're picked differently and they're processed differently. So then what arrives in your cup is completely different. So, like, the more you get into it, the more you'll realise, like, do you know what? I don't fancy a dusty bag anymore. So, and then that's good for the environment. The more you do that, the less plastic waste, potentially, depending on the bag that you're putting in the environment. So I'm just saying, it's a win-win. And then last night, I made a little infuse that stuff into a bit of gin.
A bit of gin.
And make a G and T.
You like a cheeky G and T, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and then you're good to go.
So we're having tea cocktails now. Is that a vibe?
Yeah, that
should
is
we,
a vibe.
Should we go and get a tea cocktail after this?
I'm ready. I'm so
ready.
Down.
It's time, isn't it? Like 2 o'clock. Ebony's awake. The world is ready. So I've noticed you've got a bucket list. You've mentioned this to me before.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the bucket list and the inspiration behind it and what's on there.
Yeah, there's a million things. So it's got 83 things, if I remember correctly. I made it, I was at a point, I'd finished sport, right? And I thought, you know, I nailed sport in the sense of, you know, got to the highest level. But I was looking at all my other mates, I was thinking, have I really lived? Have I, like, done basic things like anything from I hadn't been to Brick Lane and had a curry through to I wanted to go to New Zealand and travel in a camper van or, you know, all these sorts of things. So I sat down and just like, you know, I don't know, I felt like I hadn't been living enough, even though I do live, but I'd just been so sport lasered.
So sport work, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like, and I almost feel like the sport to work thing, there's like not much transition period in between because you kind of just got to throw down the hammers and dive straight into the next thing.
100%.
There's no grace there.
There's no space. You just kind of, so you have to force it, right?
Yeah.
So I wrote down a million things and just started doing them. It was amazing. Like, I don't know, an example would be wild camping in Isle of Skye or campervanning through New Zealand or South Africa, going on a safari. I've just done like, I started to just get moving.
Slowly tick them off.
Yeah.
There's one actually that I noticed on there that I thought I could get involved in.
Come
with
on,
you.
Can you help me?
Because I saw that you were looking for people to propel forward on this list. I thought the free running, and that could be done.
Could you hook me up?
I think we could do
have
that.
Have I still got, because I'm a bit worried about like when my knee's going, so I might need to get this done in the next like 10
we
years.
We could go to an outdoor gym actually.
I'm down for that.
We could try it there and then we could hurl ourselves around London.
What about skiing? I mean, obviously you're not a skier, but snowboarding.
Oh, yeah,
can you hook me up?
I saw skiing was on your list. I was like, what
all
is this
years
all
of playing,
about?
I never did it because we couldn't, as in you weren't allowed. And then since I finished, I haven't sorted myself out. Mate, come
I
on.
I can definitely.
Can you help me?
I can help you learn to ski. I could also
what
help you learn
whiteboard?
To snowboard. Basically, any form of board sport. It's
I'm signing you up. Job
okay.
done.
But for an exchange.
Oh, what do you? Okay, what do you want to know? Cricket.
I actually like to get good at golf, you know.
Oh, yeah, I can give you the basics. I mean, I'm not a great golfer, but I can get you into swinging and hitting. And
yeah.
That's a good trade-off.
That's a good trade-off. Okay, we've got a deal. We've got a deal.
I'm down. I'm in.
Delving back a little bit into a darker period of time,
yeah.
Your back injury was really quite significant. And I know a lot of people, myself included, would really struggle with, you know, the physical element and mental element of what you went through. How did you pick yourself back up after that?
Yeah, it was.
And tell us a little bit more about how it happened.
I'd always had a dodgy back from a kid, as in I used to bowl with what's called a mixed action, and I think it was causing all these problems. And I, one day basically, I was about 19, I was at university and junior England stuff, and I fell over. I had felt pain at training, went home and then went to pick up a remote, and I'd probably never really walked together for a year. Like, I was down, turned out I had 2 prolapsed discs, past defect. Like, my back was in a state, and I remember getting the MRI because, you know, I really couldn't walk and I had like a limp and all this sort of stuff. And they said it's unlikely I'd play sport again.
That is a real shutdown.
Oh,
like,
mate,
doors
it was
closed.
Yeah, and you know when you've dedicated everything you do towards it to think that like it's just gone. So I remember being with my mum the moment they told me, and I was in so much pain, like I had to leave uni because I couldn't sit up properly to even do my exams and stuff. So I had this year of just like deep dark depression place and just like eating loads of cake. And all I did was like watch Homes Under the Hammer. Angel cake is the one. If you're down, I'll tell you what, if there's a cake that you need, it's angel cake.
Really?
And unfortunately, I overloaded on it.
I feel like, do you eat angel cake now?
No, I don't. But if I know if I get to that point, I'm calling for angel cake. I know it's the one.
It got you through the dark times.
It got me through the dark times.
But how did you dig yourself out of that hole? Like, a year is a really, really long time out of anything.
Yeah, just like out.
I mean, we've just experienced a really bizarre year.
Yeah.
When you look back at it, it's like it's gone quick, but it's also been long.
Yeah.
Really,
it's
really
a long,
long
time.
So how did you dig yourself back out?
Was there
angel cake stairs?
I would have eaten my way up those stairs, trust me. My brother was the kind of, he laid into me basically a lot of effing blinding. It was one of those phone calls where it wasn't that he was, because it wasn't my fault, my back was in a really bad way.
Yeah.
But he was also saying mentally you've just kind of accepted it and you're not fighting, you're not trying to like, because I tried basically, you know, physio and stuff like that, nothing was working. And so, because he laid into me and then my mum was giving me all these motivational books and DVDs, I finally just kind of clicked and I was like, I need to do something, like I don't know what. And what ended up changing it overall was I found this chiropractor. I was ringing all sorts of different people and I found this chiropractor who, I don't know, he helped me ridiculously. I remember the first time after I left the session, bearing in mind it had been a year and nothing had worked. And I remember just being able to walk for 2 hours and then I had to like lie down again. But having 2 hours of being able to stay on my feet was just like, mate, this is mental. And so I suppose it was just a building thing, but I would say it was more psychological, changing my thinking patterns of what is possible rather than accepting what is. And like I wrote up my goals on my wall and I remember writing, I hadn't played full England, but I wrote, I want to be part of the World Cup team. I wanted to come back and get a master's in chemistry. I just started writing my goals and like really laser focusing. And I do that still now. So I think it's
80-20.
So yeah, I just think what I would say, like, if anyone's going to go through a dark time, what I often say is it's the quality sometimes of the questions you say to yourself in your mind. So, you know, we're going to have losses, lose job, lose partners, lose all sorts of stuff, lose loved ones. And I think the cycle of questions, if they're negative, like why has this happened to me, which I spent a lot of that time in that place, like why has this happened to me, what did I do to deserve it, like that's not going to get anything out of it. Mm. Whereas I think when you start to have better positive questions of what could I do that could progress me today, you know, what goals could I set that would excite me? I started writing those sort of things down and I started to move more. So I would say think about when you're in a tough time, the questions that you're asking yourself, and the better they are, the easier it is to be more resilient.
And that consistent questioning built up your resilience.
Massive.
To come back.
Yeah, a bit of steel. Because that's the thing. And then once I started and I started, like, got the energy
going. The angel cake became bricks.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's really fascinating. I don't think I've had angel cake. I might go and get one today. But I haven't had angel cake. Look, you've inspired me. Actually, maybe I won't. Maybe I just save it for a dark place. But it was like, I mean, I'd put on a lot of weight and all of that. But yeah, it's where I think I maybe developed my steel as a person. Because, you know, I just felt like I had to fight to just have a normal life. And then...
And now here you are.
Yeah, now I'm just busy and now we're hanging out and now
excelling on all fronts.
If I hadn't done that, I might not have met you, mate.
I love it. Like the entrepreneurialness, the sort of drive for creating opportunity for other people. Like it's inspiring. And
as a mate,
I like look up to you and it's wicked to see what you're doing. And hopefully I can follow in your footsteps.
None of this follow, mate. You're doing it. I'm just looking to see full of beans go large.
full of beans and inspire a team.
Yeah, I'm all
taking
over.
Taking off.
Taking over.
Wicked. Ebs, thank you so much for joining us on Monday Mile. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having
me. 1 mile stroll, absolutely boshed it out. I reckon the pub's calling now.
I'm ready, let's go. It's about time.
Because it's Monday.
Because it's Monday and pubs are ready to serve.
And we're starting at Ebony time. It's past 12, so...
Let's go.
It's time for the pub.
Monday Mile listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoyed that one as much as I did. It's a new week and it's time to set that laser focus and get after it. We really do have some excitement brewing out here at the Monday Mile HQ and a big week of recording coming up. So stay tuned and save that angel cake for a rainy day. Please do subscribe and check out the visual highlights across social on both Instagram and TikTok. Have an absolutely wicked week.